Well, we're back, and Michelle Newman is with us once again to share another one of her artful journeys. This time she's going to take us to Malaysia's Batik Week. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, Roy. How are you? We are going to go to Batik Week. You're right.
That's Batik, not Batik, huh?
Batik.
Well, but you, let me say this. You know, you ask any man, mm-hmm. and of course he'll know that, and of course he'll immediately tell you it's what Mama Cass wore in the 70s, or maybe would it be something that you'd wrap around your head while riding your Harley?
Exactly.
From a man's point of view,
initially,
anyway.
Initially, it's funny you said that, because in India, many, many, many centuries ago, if not thousands of years ago, when they were originating batik in that part of the world, banderas, that word comes from, you know, a bandera that you wear is from the Indian word, and it was usually a batik fabric that was made into a kerchief that you wore on your head.
See, so we men are not all that dumb, you know?
That's right.
We know about this stuff.
That's right. We're getting sexist here, aren't we?
I know.
What batik? Okay, you're the guy. You're macho men, or they know, have all the answers. Do you know what batik really is, how the process works?
Well, I do a little bit from reading your article, but why don't you tell our audience, since I'm so well informed?
Okie dokie. Well, basically, batik is what's known as a resist process in the world of textiles. And what that means is you can batik on wood, fabric, or paper. And what is done is wax, beeswax, and paraffin is taken, and it's melted. So it's in a molten state. And then it is painted on a piece of white fabric or light-colored fabric. And wherever the wax is brushed on the surface of the fabric, when you immerse that piece of fabric into a bucket of dye or a vat of dye, every place that you've painted it with hot wax will resist the dye.
Right.
So it will stay white. And then you would dye whatever color is there, it would dye all around the wax part, but not the wax. Then you remove it from your dye pot, let it dry, and it's a sequential process where you work from light to dark. So then you would re-wax the part that you want to stay a pale color, re-dip it in the dye, remove it. And this process is a layering technique, an additive technique. And then the wax is removed after the piece is finished by boiling the wax, or in the U.S., batik artists send it to the dry cleaners, but they don't have batik artists. You know, they don't have too many dry cleaners like in Bali or Malaysia who do that. It's done in home studios, village workshops, and the wax is boiled off in a matter of just minutes. It floats to the top. And that's how beautiful designs of fabric and patterns are created.
Well, let me just say, for those that are listening to the show online, if you go to to Michelle's article, there's some fabulous photos, because she just takes some incredible photographs. And if you can sort of follow this process that she's explaining to you. And, of course, there's a big difference between this and what we know in the United States as tie-dye, of course.
Oh, totally. Tie-dye does not use wax. But what's really impressive is that centuries ago, thousands of years ago, this process started in that part of the world, in India, Indonesia, Malaysia, and they've even found remnants of batik fabrics in some of the Egyptian tombs. And even today, batik is still done in these countries, and it's also done in Africa, China, Japan, Indonesia, and Malaysia. And what's really interesting is there's a major difference between Indonesian and Balinese batik and Malaysian batik.
In terms of colors or just design? Or
all of the above. The Indonesian batik is the true, genuine, authentic batik. It's very elaborate, it's very traditional, and it's very labor intensive and very, very detailed and very tiny. But like I said, it's very traditional. Now, you come over to Malaysia, which is not too far from Indonesia, you're going to find their batiks are looser, freer, brighter colors, more fashion-forward, more contemporary, more avant-garde. But yet, they use the same technique of brushing the hot wax on, either with a brush or a tool that's called a shanting tool. And if you want to see some spectacular images, if you go to www.k.com, lib.com. That was for the World Batik Conference. That's also going to be in Kuala Lumpur in December 2007. And another fabulous source for batik is the Malaysian government, unlike our government, supports the arts and supports the artists. The Minister of Culture is extremely interested in supporting the arts and the traditions and the culture and heritage of their country. And they actually train their artists and send them to a 3-year university where they can learn batik and other indigenous crafts, native crafts, free.
Now that, you know, that
it's amazing.
Yeah,
and
well,
they also, I mean, it's just astounding. And they also set them up in a art incubator program. And what's really impressive is the Malaysians take so much pride in their batik heritage, and there's a tremendous revival. And batik is a very big business in Malaysia.
Well, it's interesting because, for a number of reasons, but this also falls back to what you do when you were teaching different art forms and home business type things to the Indian,
exactly,
the Blackfeet people. So, I mean, this is... a lot. This obviously must have fascinated you when you said, gee, this is exactly what I've been talking about in the States.
Oh, it was fabulous. As a matter of fact, I worked very, very closely with Dr. Zakia Ahmed, and she is the director of, well, at that time she was the director of Kraftanang, which is the government-sponsored arts and crafts program and exquisite art galleries where you can find all of the native handcrafts throughout Malaysia. And Dato Ahmed arranged for me to travel throughout Malaysia and visit all of the major batik centers. I spent a month there studying batik and actually hands-on batik with the village women and also in some of the larger batik studios. I mean, there are some, Nur Afa, for instance, she has a major business, I mean a huge business. She's even on their version of Malaysian shopping network selling her batik items, her batik clothing and textiles. So you have anything from the small village studio into Paris Couture Runway. I can't begin to tell you how fashion forward the new Malaysian designers are. And there are three women who are very, very, very responsible, who've done an outstanding job in Malaysia of continuing the heritage of Malaysian batik. And one is the Prime Minister's wife, the departed, the former Datin Sri Endon. And she was responsible for reviving batik in a major scale and impressed the Malaysians to wear batik every Friday, to wear batik, to wear an article of batik clothing, to instill their sense of heritage. And as I also mentioned, Dato Zakia Ahmed, who is now the Secretary of Culture and Heritage and Arts, she's also played a major role in promoting batik, and this is something dear and close to her heart. And then Puan Lila Mohammed Ali, who is the CEO of KLIB, is also very, very involved with Stephen Doss, who's the director of promoting batik, and their goal is to put batik, Malaysian batik, on a world-class basis.
Now, did you actually attend a fashion show while you were there?
Yes, I attended the KLIB, which was the International Batik Festival. I kid you not, I have been to fashion shows in Paris and New York during Fashion Week. This fashion show rivaled anything you would see on the Paris Couture runways. Yes, it was spectacular.
And you said even the King and Queen of Malaysia were there.
Oh, my gosh, I got to meet the King and Queen. I did, and they were wearing batik outfits, of course.
And you as well?
Yes, I bought, I don't want to tell you how much money I spent on Malaysian batiks.
How wonderful. They have this educational organization.
Kraftanang.
That's what it's called. Okay.
It's hard to say.
Well, you know, you're doing very well. Is that a little bit of leftover Hebrew or?
Arabic and Hebrew, you know, it's that sound.
Yeah, you get that guttural sound.
Yeah,
you're doing
yeah.
very well. So the students and emerging artists are provided with the necessary skills to become financially and self-sufficient and independent,
yes.
And that's what it's all about.
Yes, and I was especially honored because Dato Zakia Ahmed invited me and sent me to actually attend the Kraft Institute, and I had a personal tour of this institute, seeing all of the different indigenous crafts. We spent most of the time in the boutique studios, but the education that these students are getting, there's no place else in the world that has any program similar to this. And the Malaysian government's commitment to keeping their arts alive and helping their people develop their economy and continue these cultural heritage arts is so impressive. And I was also invited by Dato to come and teach for a semester at the Kraft Institute to show some of my contemporary techniques of batik, to include that into their repertoire. So I was extremely honored, you know, to have that invitation extended to me.
That's wonderful. Now, just getting back to the institute again. So
yes.
The students are giving part of the tuition, the supplies and materials are all provided. And
not part, Roy.
All of it, right. And they're given a monthly allowance as well.
Yes, and they get to stay on campus, and then they also give them incubator money and teach them entrepreneurial skills of how to set up a business and run the business. And then once they're out of school, they also get a certificate or a diploma. And after that, there's a regimented program they go through, so they learn all about the various batik techniques, because you could brush wax on, you could stamp it on with a metal printing block, or you can use a specific needle-like tube that you draw the design on with the hot wax. And they also teach the students how to do what's known as natural dyeing, where you're using plant and natural sources for your dyes rather than chemical dyes. So they get an amazing background. I want to go to school there.
They must have been quite impressed with your artistic ability and just the interest and the enthusiasm that you show in everything you do. I'm sure they were impressed by that.
Well, I've been batiking since I'm 16, and I learned how to batik in high school. Mr. Marinaccio put a shanting tool, which is the tool that you use to batik with, when I was 16, and ever since that time, I was hooked. And I'm actually writing my second book on batik, and I was doing some research about batik while I was in Malaysia, and I just can't wait to get back. It's a very, very special place.
How exciting. Now, just one more time, because we're just about out of time here.
Yes.
Would you just repeat some of the links that they can go to get more information?
Yes.
I'm looking at the bottom of your... I can repeat them unless you have them in front of you.
Well, the first one would be
the history of
www.klib.com.
Okay.
And you have Kraft Tagan, and that's a little tricky to spell, so I'll let you spell that one.
Okay. Is it the one with the university, you mean?
It could be www.kraftagan.com. If not, people can contact me at michellenewmandesigns@hotmail.com, and I can provide them with that link.
Great. Michelle, that's super. And once again, we encourage you to go to Michelle's article. She has some great photos, a lot of color. And you'll be very impressed, I'm sure.
And invite everybody to KLIB in Kuala Lumpur in December 2007.
And they can get that information on that website.
Sounds great, Roy.
Michelle, thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. My pleasure as well.
Bye for now.
Bye.